I think we must begin by understanding what we mean by revolt and rebellion. Basically, this is a category invented by those in power. Yes? Without, I mean, for those who aren't in power, it isn't necessarily rebelling against, it may be the assertion of, and how you assert your rights or your demands. And consequently, to define what constitutes a rebellion or a revolt is very much something that is done from above. I should add, somebody has once discovered, or once said, that the bulk of Russian peasant revolts in the 19th century consisted of crowds of sullen peasants in the village square being addressed by policemen. That was all there was, you see. I should add that the concept of the rebellion as such is something which is quite often taken over by a group of revolutionaries or progressives or rebels from the original category, which is one of power, assertion of, you know, people who disturb public order, you see. And I think one finds this quite often in, Francisc Ferrer, who said, I am not a revolutionary, I'm a révolté. I think we have to consider not the term rebellion and revolt. I would prefer to abandon it and to talk about movements of assertion, of protest, of assertion of rights, and so on. And how these operate, I think, is very important. Traditionally speaking, in the periods in which I was first interested, very rarely are they completely spontaneous. They operate within a matrix of conventions, of assumptions of how people behave or ought to behave to each other, you see. And they always rely to some extent on some kind of structure of decision, or if you like, structure of advice. If you actually look at movements, in peasant movements, other things, village movements, you will invariably find, in a sense, even there are, in the most primitive form, there are arrangements for assemblies, you see? People, occasions where people get together, and then you discussed, and then there are assumptions about how decisions are taken, or who you apply to for views about what decisions are taken. For instance, in the early 20th century in the Balkans, as people would be meeting around, wherever it might be, they would be meeting around the post office to discuss some new thing, you see. And people would discuss, and if there wasn't a village headman or important figure, they would consult the teacher. If there was a school in the neighborhood, the school teacher would be a potential center for formation of opinion and, if necessary, action. And, or at a lower level, the local shoemaker would, invariably, you see. So you've got to understand that even these officially spontaneous movements have structures, often conventions, just as if you have in France in the 18th century, taxation populaire, you see, isn't something that suddenly happened because things. There were ways of doing it, and you knew how it should be done if it were to occur, you see. And you also knew, for instance, in this instance, that women would be taking an important part in it. Well, this was part of the function, you see.